education is important, but you also have to make time for yourself. When you're done with school, it doesn't mean go ahead and get involved with other people, get married, settle down. Find out who you are. Do all the things that you want to do.
This is the Action Filmmaking Decoded Podcast. A podcast dedicated to raw action analysis.
Ooh, my gosh. For fans of action cinema out there, how badass would that be?
Each week, we bring you a new action filmmaker to break down your favorite scenes.
360 off person, round kick the guy from a 360 spin.
Now, introducing your hosts, Darren Tun and Mike Messina.
What's up, everyone? Mike here. Welcome to part three of our chat with Vlad Rimberg. In this one, Vlad gets into the choreography for some of his most popular action shorts and gives us some hot takes too, like why the Protectors Wonder doesn't really work. He also tells us the secret to good action shaky cam, which I can't wait to try out. It's a fun one. Hope you enjoy.
We wanted to do our last breakdown with your short Ballerina. We were kind of wondering, what's the female John Wick's name? Jane Wick, is it?
You know, that's a great question. Yeah. There really is no name. I would assume it would be Jane Wick.
Yeah.
It's just shy performing.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, Ballerina. Travis Wong and I talked about possibly doing something together, and Travis told me about this performer out of, I think, North Carolina or Atlanta or somewhere named Shy. So he flew her out and, you know, we created Ballerina. Now, when she came out, we had one day of prep. So a lot of the Hapkido movements that you see being implemented were created by Dennis Rule, because he's a Hapkido practitioner and he used to have his own martial arts school where he taught Hapkido. So I looked at the John Wick series and I thought, okay, there's a lot of judo involved. I said, well, why don't we make it a little bit different and involve some Hapkido without having to go to the ground so often? So Dennis played a very important role in that, in creating those particular kinds of movements. And then everything else we shot in 2 days, everyone lined up. You see, at one point we have like, I don't know, 15, 20 people. I was never expecting to have so many people because we were shooting this. I think we got together like at 9 p.m. or 11 p.m., something like that. Like, and then we'd go well into the morning. And one of the days we just got overloaded with people and my thought process went out the window. All my ideas went out the window and I had to modify everything. So like there's this moment where everyone's standing like in a tight room and we make it seem like a door is opening up. And then Shy grabs Alan by the nuts and she goes forward with the gun. That was something that was kind of created last minute, again, because so many people had showed up. Travis and I were calling people and, you know, some were saying, hey, I don't think I can make it. So it's like, great. You know, if I can't have option A, I'll go to option B. But then we had both option A and B show up. But it was a good learning experience. I wasn't trying to replicate John Wick at all. I was trying to make it unique and fresh because it's Ballerina. I wanted to go away from the judo and go into Hapkido. And if you're going to use the title Ballerina, I would expect some lavish and flair-like moves that resemble a ballerina. So in the beginning, like the forward walkover cartwheel that Shy does, and then she spins around and sweeps someone from their feet, Kyle Potter. Those kind of spinning movements. And then she does a 540 hook onto Kyle after some Hapkido maneuvers. Those are the kind of movements I would expect a ballerina to do. You know, it's whatever the choreography beat is, but the big movements would play and pay off in a very lavish and spectacular way that involve spinning. Like a ballerina would. Jumping just like a ballerina would. So if someone's like, yeah, here's this movie Ballerina, and it's literally the exact same thing as John Wick, of course, smart gunplay, but doing a bunch of judo throws and taking guys down to the ground like that, I'm like, well, why is that ballerina? Where is any relation from ballerina-like movements to judo?
Right.
I could see that in kicks, but not necessarily in throws. You know what I'm saying? Have the performer jump up in the ballerinas jump up. They spin. They do certain things. I took history of dance and, you know, ballet is a classical art form of dance. Just like I say, Hong Kong cinema is a classical art form of martial arts cinema. So there were a lot of things that I wanted to do my way. And we made sure that we surrounded ourselves with the right people like Dennis to help that vision come to life. Travis Wong was a stunt coordinator, making sure that everyone was safe. And we would talk about things like, yeah, do you like this? I like this. Let's put this in there, you know? Again, a collaborative effort. It wasn't a full-on Vlad shoot. and it was on the Vlad sheet from like 2006-07. It's either my way or get out of here. I'll find someone else to do it.
Right.
I want everyone to stay involved and excited when they work with me. It was a nice learning experience. I look at it now and I'm like, absolutely, I could do some things differently. I can make it a lot smarter.
Mm-hmm.
I do read comments, even the negative comments. And when they tell me that it's all wrong, it's nothing like John Wick, I say, thank you very much for watching the video. More content on the channel. You know, that's it. You're not going to please everyone.
Uh-huh.
Someone once asked me an important question, like, or unique question. What do you tell people that say everything looks the same? Well, it's like, I can't please everyone.
Mm-hmm.
And it all depends on who's telling me. If it's a producer that's telling me, then I'll listen. If it's Joe Schmo 97 on YouTube, I'd be like, honestly, I could care less. I don't know you. I don't know what you like. You know, for all I know, reality to you is Star Wars.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know, that's the comparison I make with choreography, because people be like, oh, that's not real. That's not real. Do you like Star Wars? Yes, it's my favorite movie. Great. That's not real. I don't know if that's ever going to happen.
Yeah.
Okay. There's a give and take
mm-hmm.
to how you process information
mm-hmm.
and responses from your audience.
Mm-hmm.
When I see that there's 33,000 likes versus 3,500 dislikes, I'm like, the majority of people like what I put out.
Mm-hmm.
And at the end of the day, to be honest, any of my personal projects, these are all projects when I go ahead and I lay down and I have a smoke before I go to sleep,
mm-hmm.
I like to watch my stuff. You know,
mm-hmm, yeah.
So if I can watch my stuff on repeat, to me, that means I did a good job. And I'm not saying that because I did it or I made it. It's because I know how picky I can be.
Mm.
I know what kind of a perfectionist I am.
Mm-hmm.
So if it still makes me happy to watch it 5 years later, 10 years
again
later,
again, yeah.
Then I know I did a good job.
Yeah.
Hell yeah.
I got one more ballerina related question. We mentioned that groin grabbed and charging down the hallway full of people. Was that awkward to shoot at all, someone getting groin grabbed like that? And how many groin grabs have you choreographed, do you think, throughout your career?
That groin grab. Well, we put our one eye man, Alan, and that's one of the things I would have changed. Alan wrecks really well, but at the time I was okay with his one eye pointing the gun, and I just straight up told him, I'm like, okay, Alan, over here, you're gonna get grabbed in the nuts,
yeah,
put on a cup and let's go, you know. And we all laughed about it, but it's like, hey, this is what I want. At the end of the day, it can sound like a joke, but if I have to raise my voice and tell someone that this is what I want,
mm-hmm.
otherwise don't come to a Vlad shoot.
Mm-hmm.
Like I've had that groin grab. A nice little groin sequence we had was in the Hammer Girl, the Raid 2 fan film that we did, where the Hammer Girl rips out her hammer from a guy's genitals.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you guys got to see that, but that was a lot of fun and a lot more visual, because we cut a hole in the pants of Micah Carnes and I poured cold blood into his hand. Like, I had him cup the blood with his hand.
Oh.
And I put two well-done eggs that I purchased. I think I purchased a 4-pack from 7-Eleven.
Mm-hmm.
I dipped them in blood, and I'm like, Micah, at the right time, you just flip your hand up and let everything pour out.
So
that was the most visual groin anything I've ever done.
Mm.
But you know, like certain things, like eye gouging and things like that, groin grabs, that gets the attention of the audience. Anyone that ever gets kicked in the nuts, everyone's going to go like, ooh, it doesn't matter where you are. You can see it a million times,
yeah.
But if you're going to go ahead and watch something new and in the middle of the movie someone gets kicked in the nuts, you're going to feel it.
Mm-hmm.
And I've done a bunch of different things. I've had people put their fingers in other people's mouths. I've had fingers go up noses, or two fingers go up a nose. You know, different things that I think look painful and they're not fun.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Because, you know, being different is what gets you recognized.
Mm-hmm.
Also, you know, just to give John Wick props, when I wrote Ballerina, I also put like female John Wick. I'm pretty sure that is what also got us a bunch of views.
Mm-hmm.
Whenever I put out content, it's never to be like, I want a million views. It's just like, hey, whoever gets to see it, I hope they get entertained.
Mm-hmm.
And if they do, if they get excited, if I make them feel like they want to go out and shoot something on their own, then I know I did a good job.
Definitely. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And now I noticed too that when I was going back and looking at a lot of your older fight scenes, it seemed like the lens was like a lot tighter in on the action. And now when I look at your previses and shorts, there was more like wider shots being implemented. Was there like a reason for this change? Because I definitely see that wide angle lens for sure.
Well, back in the day, I was shooting on the DVX 100, which had one lens on it. It's a set lens. And it was a lot easier to crash zoom out, which was a big thing back in the day.
Oh, yeah.
And of course, we kind of followed with it as well. but it was a lot easier to crash zoom out. It was pretty much whatever was on the camera. When I got the DSLR, the Canon 7D, it also had a set lens on it. Or, I mean, it came with a lens that was an 18 to like 135.
Mm.
When I got the 11 to the 24, the super wide lens, which I jokingly say that Guy De Silva conned me into getting, but it was the best investment I've ever made, I started enjoying the wider lens.
Yeah.
I was just able to do everything that I needed to do with it.
Mm-hmm.
With the 7D, I don't have a full frame sensor on it, so everything's already cropped. But shooting on that, like if I need a tight shot, for Privis, I wasn't so much worried about like depth of field or anything like that. It's like, hey, we're here to tell a story and the Privis just has to look good. All the technicalities of it, you know, the lighting, the soft focus, the hard focus, whatever it is, that's all going to get done on the day. And that one wide angle was just like one fits all. Even on the Red now, the beautiful thing about the Red is the lowest format it shoots is in 2K. The one that I have.
Mm-hmm.
The highest is 5K. It's the Gemini 5K series. So I'll shoot in 2K and my 11 to 24 becomes like a 50 to like a 65 lens.
Oh, yeah.
Wow. And if I need more space, I start changing. I go to 3K, 4K, 5K if I need to.
And the focal lengths are changing. Now, wow.
Absolutely. Well, yes, they're changing. It still says 11 to 24 on the Red because when you use an automatic lens,
yeah,
it gives you the focal points, which is great. But realistically, you know, as we just said, it's no longer an 11-24. It's like a 50 to 65.
Mm-hmm. It's cropped.
So I use that lens religiously. Now, when I do other projects with the 5 that I shoot in 5K, I will get on a tighter lens. It all depends. Like, I did the tighter lens also because at the time, Korean cinema, I felt, was dominating the action world. And Korean shaky cam is the best version of shaky cam out there. Unless you give me a camera to operate them, I will out shaky cam the Korean shaky cam and make it even better. You'll see some of that, like in the short that I did, Men in Suits, and like Mickey versus Amy and the other shorts. It feels tighter because I would back up and zoom in, but I kept everything in frame. That's the secret to shaky cam. Go far away, you zoom in, and you make sure everything is in frame.
Mm.
We have the best shaky cam. So see, on your show today, I gave out like 3 or 4 secrets already.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's been great.
For anyone listening. But the thing is, again, even though I'm telling you how to do it, it doesn't mean you know how to do it.
Right.
You have to
implementation.
Go implementation. Right. Absolutely. Absolutely. Like for me, though, if I see someone doing something, I could study someone and I think I have it. And for the most part, I'm able to replicate it right away. But that's only because I've been holding a camera for 20 years. 20 years to anyone that's listening to me.
Mm.
And I was shooting fights for like 12 years before I started doing it professionally. So the time was invested. I'm not saying you can't. You shouldn't go into the industry until you get 5-10 years.
Mm-hmm.
What I'm saying is, even if you're working in the industry, you know, you shooting one fight scene a year isn't enough.
Mm-hmm.
You need to be shooting like 5 to 10 a year. And right now, like with a lot of these people out there, you know, where they only work the jobs, they don't have to go work at Ralph's, they don't have to deliver food, they don't work at Apple. Like, there's really no excuse. I get it. We are living in funky times, but it is possible to go ahead and shoot in a very safe way. You can still wear your mask. You can do a one-on-one. You got to practice. You know, like, I can give a full-on masterclass, reveal all my secrets, you know, for a very nice lump sum of money. But I wouldn't want to do that because unless you're practicing it, it's just me talking out of my butt.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's the reality. Someone can talk. If you haven't practiced it, you don't understand how to hold on to that information that's being given to you.
Yeah, you got
to
do the work.
You know, like if I've never acted before and I take a master class and Leonardo DiCaprio's teaching an acting class and he's telling me all these things and I've never acted before, I've done very limited, there's going to be a lot of things that I don't know what the hell he's talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And I won't know the process or the science of it. I won't know the application of it because I haven't applied myself. It's the same thing. Like, all I do nowadays is just preach.
Right.
You guys have to go out and shoot. That's the only way to get better.
Mm-hmm.
And then after you shoot something, go reshoot it again to make it even better. I tell people, watch movies. People don't watch movies. I give them homework assignment. Lad, you give me homework? Yes. I'm giving you homework. Your homework assignment is to go and watch this Jackie Chan movie.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
What a terrible homework assignment. To be able to sit down, if you want to smoke, if you want to have a beer, if you want to eat chips, pizza, whatever, to make yourself comfortable and watch a Jackie Chan or Sammo Hung movie. The people that I shot with, people like Eric Jacobus, Dennis Ru, Ken Kitagawa, you know, Andy Long, we were religious fanatics when it came to Hong Kong cinema. So when we talked about choreography, there was also a reference that we could go back to. Like, I need you to do it like this guy from this movie and this part. Okay, I got it. Nowadays, people are just coming up with choreography bits from the nonsense they see on TV nowadays, you know, and that's not a good starting point. Mm-hmm. Like, know where you're coming from so you have places to pull and you have resources and you have, you know, examples to give. If you don't watch any Hong Kong cinema and you shoot one fight scene a year, to me, that's no bueno. It's no good. Mm-hmm. Now, if you watched all the Hong Kong cinema, and I can go ahead and start asking you ridiculous questions, and you can answer these ridiculous mm-hmm. questions, then at least I know that you have studied it.
Uh-huh, right.
There's some knowledge, you understand the theory behind it, right? But if you're not doing anything, you know, you're not, I don't think you get far in any industry with whatever it is that you go mm-hmm. and do. If someone professionally is giving you advice, listen to that. I've told people to do previses, and, you know, one previs was done, and I was able to hire this person because the previs was done.
Mm.
Because I need to know, like, if I give you a homework assignment, I need to know that you can go do it. It's a whole new world out there, you know. It's the cancel culture, it's the I know everything culture, it's the I don't need to practice it culture to do it culture.
Yeah.
And it doesn't work that way. Mm. Not in our industry, not when you're making a lot of money.
Right. No short.
Yeah, absolutely. Put in the work, do the work, no fake it to make it. Don't bullshit your credits, you know. Because if you do, people will know. People will absolutely know. Mm-hmm. People will know. People can't be like, oh, Vlad, you put action director. I'd be like, yes, because I set up all the camera angles. I would say action. I would tell people the beats and the rhythm to the action beats. I did everything
mm-hmm.
an action director would do.
Mm-hmm.
I'd be like, go to set. You know, watch me work. Now, when other people put credits, I'm like, I don't know if I... buy that, you know. Yeah. And the problem I have with stuff like that is because in the future, when we're all working regularly or working big shows, if you bullshit with your credits and you become a stunt coordinator, now you're responsible for the safety of other people.
Mm-hmm.
And if you bullshit with your credits and someone gets injured, oh man, you know what? Honestly, go F yourself
mm-hmm.
like that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, go F yourself, go burn in hell. Because when I go do my job, I need to know my job, right? It's like, right. as a fight coordinator or an action director, if someone throws an oddball, you know, or a curveball at me, I better know how to catch that and keep going with it. That's my job. That's what I've been practicing the last 20 years, is knowing how to operate things behind the camera. As a performer, your job is to know how to operate things in front of the camera, which is yourself, which is the person you're performing with. You have to know how to dance. You have to know how to make yourself look powerful.
Mm-hmm.
You have to know how to do all these things, and the only way to know how to do all these things is by actually going out and doing them,
mm.
which is why the indie community is such a beautiful community, because I'm going to say like this, people like me, Tony Chu, Eric Jacobus, we've all given you little people the opportunity to go out and shoot this stuff, because when we were doing all these test fights and shorts, industry professionals were going like, why are you guys doing this?
Mm-hmm.
Why are you guys doing this? And now everyone goes out and shoots their own stuff. Even industry professionals, they all go out and shoot their own stuff. And they realize that this is the only way to get better. And they started using, you know, stuff from their short films and their choreography reels and their coordinated reels.
Mm-hmm.
The same people that were bashing on people like Manny and myself for doing that in our own stuff. Now they're out doing that. So I just want to say you're welcome to the indie community. Realistically. You know, like, everyone should have a little bit of respect for Zero Gravity, for people like Tony Chu, and everyone should know where they're coming from mm-hmm. and why they're able to go out and shoot in the places that they're shooting.
Definitely.
It's funny, I just had a conversation with someone about people using all the locations I bring them to. There's this one park that everyone shoots at, the Porter Ranch Park in the San Fernando Valley.
Mm.
I was shooting in that park since 2011
mm-hmm.
for 20 years.
Yeah.
And now you see a bunch of people shooting.
Everyone's copying.
I shot this short with Brian Sawyer. Hopefully I get to release it this year, next year, in this location that I got from Amy Studevant. And now everyone is shooting there, you know? So it's like, hey guys, you're welcome. The indie community Eric Jacobus, Dennis Rule, Zero Gravity, you know, Manny, we all want to say you're welcome for giving you guys the opportunity to go out and do things, because we were doing them when people told us not to do them.
Mm, yeah.
So I just want to say, you're welcome. Like, I'm forcing that you're welcome down everyone's throat that's going to listen to this. Yes. All the indie filmmakers, you're welcome.
That's the third teacher. Yeah. Just you're welcome. No context.
Yeah, you're welcome. It was people like myself, people like Sam Hargrave, people like Manny. We all came from the indie community and now we're working. Mm-hmm. We're all working. Not everyone makes it. That's the reality of it. Not everyone gets to make it. Some people start having families and it's like, hey, the number one priority when you have a family is your family. Mm-hmm. Other people, they start working on another job and they make very good money in the other job, so they don't pursue this thing. There are a lot of things that happen in life, but for the people that pushed, the people that said, hey, I'm going to keep going, even though, you know, this sort of thing is frowned upon, you're welcome to everyone now, you know? So again, people like Sam Hargrave, like Manny, you know, like myself, Thayer Harris, who became a second unit coordinator on Attraction, who's been working with Sam, all those guys, all of us, mm-hmm. we were shooting our own projects.
Yeah.
Real Kick had their own projects. LBP had their own projects. Fat Rembrandt had his own projects. Zero Gravity, like you have Latif and Sam Locke, who came from there, they had their own projects. And we all got to the stage we're at because of the amount of practice we had. You know, and we were practicing when people were telling us, don't practice. Mm. This is dumb. Oh, you're using your own stuff for your own reel. Well, it's like, yeah, because it's better than most of the stuff Hollywood produces. You know? The indie community, I would argue, has changed the face of American action. Mm-hmm. Because if you're doing an American action and your stuff looks crappier than what these guys put out on YouTube, people are going to take notice. Mm-hmm. People are going to take notice and want to start working with those people. Anyone that's shot a video, for the most part, and has had positive reviews about the video from the stunt community, is working somewhere. They might be shooting previs for someone. They might be camera operating on the show. But they're all doing something, because you can't take away the work that the indie community is doing, mm-hmm. because social media has become a very powerful and important platform.
Yeah.
Now, I was saying coordinators in the beginning of our podcast, I was saying coordinators don't have the time to sit down and look at everyone's stuff. So when they do, you better make sure that you're showing them the best possible version of what it is you shot. Because if you're showing them something that looks like everything else, they're not going to care, and you might lose work. Mm-hmm. The other way a coordinator is going to see something, like J.J. Perry saw Men in Suits, because Aaron Tony, who also happened to be in it, was like, hey, J.J., you got to see this. Mm-hmm. You got to see this. You know, because it was good. It was good. Mm-hmm. People started reaching out to me after Mickey and Amy because it was good. If you have good work, people will notice. They will reach out to you. Doesn't mean you're going to start working the next day. But that's the progression that you want to make. Like, you know, it goes from no one knows your name to people knowing your name, to you maybe getting a phone call, to several phone calls, to then emails, and then talking to productions. And then even at this stage, like during COVID, I read the most amount of scripts I've ever read in a short period of time, and budgeted the most amount of productions I've ever had an opportunity to budget. But 90% of those didn't happen, you know? Mm-hmm. And it's like, well, shit, yeah. Why was I wasting my time? I wasn't wasting my time. I was educating myself. I was getting better at something, right, that I have to do if I'm going to be a top player in the game. You have to know all the ins and outs.
Right.
Things don't always work out. Like, there are short films, again, I talked about some stuff audiences might never see, but I went out and I did it and I got the practice and I know how to make it better. Mm-hmm. That's the important thing, is being able to analyze your work and knowing how to progress, not just in your industry, not just as an artist, but hopefully as a human being. Being able to say, you know what, I don't know everything, and I am open to other ideas. I think that will help anyone in anything.
Yeah, definitely. Putting those reps in, a martial artist's mindset as well, to be able to leave what is not working and be humble enough to figure out a new way or a better way from other people. I think we'd love to go into a quick hot take segment where we sort of just throw something out there and then have you give your quick one sentence opinion or your take on whatever it is that we're giving you.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now I'm nervous.
First one, the Ip Man series.
Yes. Do you want me to rank them best to worst or what?
Just whatever pops into your head real quick when you hear about Ip Man.
Okay, when I hear about Ip Man, the first thing I think about is the 1-on-10 fight because I cried watching that. I literally cried. Oh, you beat the shit out of those Japanese, Donnie. You kicked their ass. They're bad people. But real quick, just to rank him, Ip Man 1 is probably my favorite. Number 2 and number 4 are in a close second, and my least favorite is number 3.
Okay. Our next one is John Wick 3.
Silence. Here's the thing. Whenever someone says, here's the thing, you know there's going to be good.
Yeah.
So the good, they upped their game with a production value. I love that they were taking on new and unique ideas as far as settings for action design. That was beautiful because honestly, each John Wick has topped the previous John Wick, which is super duper important, especially in the trilogy.
Yeah.
I just told you that, you know, Ip Man 3 was my least favorite Ip Man. And you kind of don't want to do that when you're creating a trilogy, you know? Mm-hmm. So it's like, here's the first one. It's amazing. The second one's even better. The third one's even better. And I kept asking myself, how are these guys going to top themselves?
Yeah.
And sure enough, that's how they did it. Mm-hmm. There was more money involved. There were new, unique scenarios and situations for John. Now, the bad stuff, let's move on to the next question.
Netflix and streaming services in general.
Well, you know, it's funny. Many years ago, I think maybe starting like 7 to 10 years ago, Stephen Reedy, who's an amazing filmmaker, said that everything is going to go into streaming. Like he called.
Yeah.
And sure enough, the pandemic has forced everything to go into streaming. It has its pros and its cons. From the business standpoint, a lot of people aren't fans of Netflix because the residuals aren't there. But thank goodness for Lucifer, anyone that's been in front of the camera or they've been a rigger or utility, have gotten big residuals, which is beautiful. So hell yeah. Number one, thank you to all the fans all over the world for making Lucifer the number one show and for allowing us to provide for our families and our friends. So hell yeah. There's a struggle about streaming services and residuals. And to keep things nice and politically correct, I'm not going to comment too much, but what I will say is, as someone that worked at Ralph's supermarket, someone that worked as a delivery driver for food services, and someone that's worked at Apple coming from no money. Again, going back to, I think, number 2 and number 3 that I talked about as far as like lessons and educating people, know how to manage your money. Know how to manage your money. As a coordinator, you get no residuals. Mm-hmm. You're on a flat rate contract. So residuals for me don't exist. The money I make is the money I make. So it's up to everyone to be financially responsible. If you're one of those people that was all like, when are my residuals from Joe Schmo number 3 goes to town coming in? Because it's supposed to be 100,000. Honestly, go after yourself. You should have managed your money a lot better. Now, when I say that, it's like if you're going out and you're buying yourself cars, buying yourself houses, you know, all these things, and then you run out of money, then go F yourself because you're not being responsible. But if God forbid some shit happens, then I understand residuals. So streaming services. Back to being on topic, streaming services, I think they're awesome. I think it's awesome that you can binge watch, but I'm missing the opportunity to go down to a movie theater and listen to the audience's reaction.
Yeah, that is one thing that I miss too.
That's something that unifies us all.
Yeah. Our next one is Hollywood shaky cam.
Hell yeah, don't do it because you guys suck. Step away, zoom in, and keep everything in frame. That is shaky cam. For anyone listening out there, if you're a camera operator, if you're a DP, I don't care what the hell you say, perfect shaky cam is stepping away, zooming in, and keeping everything in frame. If you're going to walk in and if you're going to do shaky cam close to an actor, go jump off of a cliff.
Next one, one take fight scenes.
Hell yeah, I love them as long as they have value. Old boy, I think that's the best one I've ever seen. Because everybody, okay, one second. So let me go backwards. Old boy is the best one I've ever seen. The protector, Tom Yong-gung, is one of the wonders that I don't like at all. Oh my God, Vlad, why don't you like the Tom Yong-gung wonder? He was doing such amazing things. I'll tell you why. Look at the old boy wonder. Everyone is involved in that scene.
Yeah.
Everyone is acting from the beginning to end. What happens to the Tom Yong-gung wonder? This guy's getting, obviously he's getting tired and he's taking on guys that aren't tired and he's throwing them off shit and he's kicking them the same way and they have to sell their reactions. I'm not buying it. I'm just like, damn, this guy's getting tired and he's still getting away with push kicking people. You know, you're just following one character. You're not following the magnitude of it all.
Right.
Like everything that's involved. Another great one, watch Contour. It's a movie that Eric Jacobus did back in 2006. Stephen Reedy, there are two oners in a row. It's a 45-second oner followed by like a 30-second oner. That's a oner. Mm-hmm. That's a beautiful oner. That's a beautiful oner that involves people. Atomic Blonde. The reason I'm naming movies like this, like Old Boy, Atomic Blonde, and even Extraction, is because these oners drive the story and the characters are still involved.
Right.
My problem with the Tom Yong Goon oner is that everyone was so fresh. Everyone was so damn fresh. I don't mind people coming in one at a time.
Yeah.
Because during the pandemic, I started making a project, which was a short film, and now it's turned into a feature. And we have 21 minutes edited. Mm-hmm. And there's a oner in there. It's about 45 seconds. Mm-hmm. Now, guys are coming in one at a time, but I explained that there's a reason for that. In the beginning, they all charge at once, and then they separate because there's a time issue going on with the exact moment of the story that I'm not going to give away right now. But when I see Tom Yong Goon, it's like, yo, Tony Jaa just threw someone down, and then these guys are going to casually come down the stairs one at a time.
Yeah.
Like, look at the Old Boy fight.
Video game.
Yeah. Everyone was there. You know, look at the Atomic Blonde fight. People were involved. They kept coming back. Mm-hmm. These guys, it's like one and done. I'd be like, wow. Even when Tony Jaa is at 10% energy level, he still has 3,000%.
He's a beast.
You know, he's still a beast. I'd be like, come on, that makes me not – it's cool, but it doesn't make me care. There's no objective. He's got to get to the top. Why are the shit ton of people just rushing him down at the same time? Mm-hmm. There's one movie that I saw when I was taking a film theory class. It's a 1932 movie. It's a black and white movie. It's a comedy, but it's a period piece. And damn it, I can't remember the name. So if anyone's listening to this, they remember, please let me know any way you can.
Yes.
But there was like a 7-minute oner. And it was just amazing. I like oners. I think they're great. Boogie Nights had a great oner. When it comes to oners, the oner has to narrate the story. When you watch Old Boy, you see everyone get tired. And you see how this one guy took out like 10 to 15 guys on his own.
Mm-hmm.
When you watch Tom Yong Goon, you're like, oh, look at Tony Jaa. Here's an elbow. Oh, look at him throwing down this guy. It's like, it's great. Listen, it's great. I walked around with the camera for 45 seconds trying to capture everything I can in the space. And that's nerve-wracking, and it's scary, and it's tiring. And I can imagine, you know, the performers going at it, staying in character, you know?
For that
long. So I give them props. Absolutely. Oh, yeah. To be honest, you guys can hate me. I'm not a fan of Thai choreography. There, I said it. I can breathe that. You know, it to me, it's a bastardized version of Hong Kong cinema.
Mm.
That's just my opinion. Listen, I'm just one person out of the 7 billion we have.
Uh-huh.
I make fight scenes. I talk the way I talk because I make the things that I make.
Definitely.
If you have a problem, grab a camera and go make anything similar to what I made. You know, like that. That's just the truth. But then again, also like people don't want to make contact. People, I'm going to get a bruise. I'd be like, aren't you supposed to be a screen fighter?
Yeah.
Yes. But I don't want to get a bruise. Well, then go find another profession.
It's not it.
Go paint.
Yeah.
Go draw. Go make music. That's my thing on wonders. Hell yeah. Next question.
The next one is Zero Gravity, the stunt group.
Oh, man. They are the reason I am where I am today.
Mm.
And when I say, oh, man, I mean that in the most beautiful way. They open up the doors for the entire indie community. I call them the godfathers of indie filmmaking because it was a group of guys that went out, shot something, and you're like, holy hell, I think I can do that. I respect them in that sense that they showed everyone that it is possible. I respect them so much that I had an opportunity to bring in Tony Chu for Lucifer. And then, of course, after COVID, things changed. But I brought him in, and a group of us went ahead and paid for his SAG fees, his union fees, you know, which is like around a little, it's over $3,000. And that was my way of thanking Tony and everything that he did indirectly for me and the stunt community is by getting him into the union and paying his fees for that. So when you talk about Zero Gravity, you know, again, the godfathers of indie filmmaking, super duper creative. They were doing camera movements well before anyone understood the kind of camera movements that they were doing. And it was wonderful. They were well ahead of their times. You see some people progress in the industry. Like you got Latif, Sam Locke. Other people are doing different things. But again, my way of saying thank you to that community was by trying to get people on Lucifer. Me getting Tony Chu his union card. So if anyone's out there you know, listening. If you need a previous guy, you need a performer, Tony Chu is in the union. And he's, he was my number one stunt guy. Honestly, he was my number one stunt guy that I would watch and admire, because back then no one knew about pads. So he hit the ground so hard, and he's still got so many creative ideas. And then I met Eric Jacobus, and I was like, holy hell, like, this guy's crazy. And then I met Sam Hargrave. And I was like, well, this guy is just, you know, all three of them are nuts. So yeah, Zero Gravity, Godfathers of Indie Filmmaking. If you don't know Zero Gravity, Larry Leong, L-E-O-N-G, he has a YouTube channel where he posted all the Zero Gravity videos as well as outtakes and commentary. So if you refuse to do your homework assignments because you don't want to open up VLC Media Player or QuickTime, you can go on YouTube, you know, and just hit play.
It's all there. Next one, Coca-Cola six packs.
Whew, please, I'm wearing mine right now. Tony's an amazing photographer, and he wanted to get me in front of the camera. We would be joking about six packs. He's like, I'm going to put a six pack on you. I said, you put that six pack on me and I'll make it as sexy as I can.
It worked. You did your job. Very good.
Thank you.
And our final hot take is being a dad.
Oh man, it's one of the most beautiful things in the world. It really is. And I mean, listen, I always wish the best for everyone, but when it comes to your own children, you want only the best for them. So, you know, I try to help out as much as I can in the indie community, because ideally I'd like to have my daughter be a part of the industry. And if I set up all that right now, then she should have it a little bit easier, and she shouldn't have to wait, you know, 14, 16 years before someone gives her a phone call to get into the industry.
Yeah.
But at the same time, honestly, you know, being a dad, you want the best for your kids. And I just want my daughter to be able to do something that she loves, and she can travel the world. I know this is not a popular opinion right now, but I'm going to say that the worst thing she can tell me is to be a doctor, even though the doctors are doing an amazing job in the world right now.
Yes. Yeah.
I don't want her to be confined to a certain space. I think traveling the world educates you. And I think being artistic is one of the most gratifying things, when you bring something to life that was nothing but a thought process and you get a reaction. It's wonderful. It's wonderful. But at the same time, she needs to learn how to go to sleep around 10 o'clock at night instead of 1 o'clock in the morning. I don't mind her waking up at 11 a.m., you know?
Yeah.
But she needs a little bit more discipline. I love my wife. She goes a little easy on the baby. As an example, you know, like when my wife is in the store and my child reaches for something, my wife will say, no, don't do that. And when I'm next to the baby, I physically put my hand on hers and put it down. And I do that a couple of times, and then, you know, she's done. So different approaches, different things. But I want my kid to be a kid. I come from a European / Russian Jewish background, where education is everything, and being creative was frowned upon, and you know, everyone would question you, like, oh, you want to do movies? Why? Why are you doing martial arts? Go be a lawyer, go to be a doctor. And it's like, oh, you make how much an hour? Oh yeah. You think you can get my nephew in there? It's like, no, I can't. No, remember, what am I doing? Like,
yeah,
you know, like that. I think a good focus for parents in general is just let your kids be kids. I'll be honest, I yell at my kid. I'm not a perfect parent. I'll raise my voice, but when I raise my voice, it's just so that way she understands that there's an authoritative force around. You know, like she can be all chill and cool around mom all the time, but when I'm there, there needs to be some discipline and obedience, because that worked for me. My dad forced me to go to karate 5-6 times a week. One time I came home from school, my elbow and my knee was scraped, bloody scraped. I'm all laying in bed. My dad gets home from work, because he worked in the supermarket, to make sure that the family had insurance. And the first thing he said when he saw me, get up and get dressed, you're going to karate. You know? So being a parent, you definitely have to force certain things, but you need to know how to let your kids be kids. Don't put them down. Let them do and let them try whatever they want. But at the same time, you have to force them to stick with something. What I've learned is parents that let their kids do anything and everything, like, I'm going to try this, I'm going to try that. Those kids, if they don't go into the work field, like retail, they'll have a hard time sustaining a job. Or, you know, like, because they're like, oh, I'm tired of this bullshit.
Yeah.
And then they quit 2 weeks later. That's no good. Like, discipline needs to be enforced. Martial arts is a great way to enforce discipline. Teaching music is a great way. You know, like, all those kids that play the piano or any kind of musical instrument, violin, That's all time that's been dedicated. And when you have an outside authoritative figure, like an instructor or a teacher, or, you know, in the martial arts sense, a master, I think that helps with the child development.
Mm-hmm.
Because they know they can't be rambunctious all the time.
Mm.
Like, they have to be.
Yeah.
They have to be a certain way around people. But there's a lot of things. Like, listen, as a parent, you have all these goals and dreams and ambitions for your kid. And the best thing you can do is keep going with the flow. Whatever happens, just know how to adapt to it and continue to be the best parent that you can with all the changes.
Mm-hmm.
And provide all the love that you can for the kid.
Definitely.
One day we will be able to use that advice, perhaps.
Yeah.
Okay. Hold on. Yeah. Should I tell people, you know, a good time to have kids in your 30s? Try to get to 30s. Where you want to get to in life.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes. The reason being is because usually you'll have up until the age of 30 to get to where you want to get to in life. You can mess up and start all mm-hmm. over again. You want to start building a family when things are a little bit more certain,
like settled in. Yeah.
Yes. As I said earlier, you know, people that started with us in the indie community, honestly, everyone could be working right
now. Mm-hmm.
Everyone could be making a lot of money. But things happen. A good buddy of mine had a kid, and he had another kid, and he had another kid.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're not established in the industry when you have a kid, it's going to be difficult to establish yourself in the industry because you have to provide for that kid and for yourself and for your partner
and
for the family.
Yeah.
And if you have nothing set up, it's going to make it a lot more difficult. It's not impossible. But if you want to make things a little bit easier, if you want to take some advice, if you've been writing anything down from everything I've been saying, don't have kids until you're in your 30s.
Mm.
Get to know who you are. Because honestly, nowadays, you know, when you're in your 20s, you're a teenager. 20s is the new teenagers. 30s is the new 20s.
Yeah. Yeah.
Why? Because what happens when you're done with school? You're forced to go to school.
That's so true.
You're forced to continue to go to school.
Yeah.
You have no knowledge or ability of living on your own, having your own money. Because a lot of times what happens when you go to college, parents are paying for that,
mm-hmm.
especially in the Asian community. Parents will pay for their kid's education. So the kid doesn't understand what it means to really, they understand now what it means to be on your own with roommates, but they don't know how to manage their financial
side of things. Right.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yes. And they don't know who they are because the entire time they've been occupied with learning things and becoming this person. Absolutely. Yeah. So what happens? During that time when you're still learning, you know, it's like, oh, I could be growing as an individual. So for me, I didn't go to a film school. I was going to go to USC film school. I was ready to transfer. I was ready to pay and get a loan for $30,000 a year.
Mm-hmm.
But then while like, I can't do that, I need to learn how to do everything on my own practically. Mm-hmm. I don't want to learn theory.
Yeah.
And at the time, it's just like, I don't know how I'll pay off this money.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, education is important, but you also have to make time for yourself.
Yeah.
When you're done with school, it doesn't mean go ahead and get involved with other people, mm-hmm. get married, settle down, find out who you are, do all the things that you want to do.
Mm-hmm.
Because as soon as you have a child, you are going to realistically think about the freedoms that you had. And the older your child gets, the more you stop thinking about those freedoms. And I'm assuming the closer your child gets to 18, you start thinking about those freedoms again. Now it's been 18 years of your life, you know?
Yeah.
It's a big commitment to make. So, you know, hey, kids out there, have protected sex. Don't do anything silly, you know?
Yep.
And all that. Wait till your 30s. Establish yourself in the 30s. Career and in the field.
Yes.
30s. 30s is a good time. Listen, perfect time. Who cares? Okay. So you'll be 55 when the kid's 20.
Mm.
Well, what's wrong with that?
Mm-hmm.
But they're not going to look at you and be like, well, you know, you're only 20 years older than me. You don't know anything. Like that. You want the kids to respect you.
Right, right.
Yeah.
They're going to respect other people.
Yeah.
If you look like you're close to their age, I mean, listen, there are people out there that do an amazing job. Single mothers, single fathers, multiple kids. Kids grow up to be great. But I'm just trying to help people, you know, by giving you advice
mm-hmm.
and making your life less difficult.
Yes, we appreciate it. The hard-hitting facts that you get on AFD here. Vlad, thank you so much for coming on.
Absolutely. Thank you, Darren and Mike. Hell yeah.
Yes. Really enjoyed this one. Thank you.
If you liked that, please consider supporting us on Patreon at patreon.com/actionfilmmaking and leaving a review on Apple Podcasts. Stay up to date on the show by visiting our website, actiondecoded.com, and by following us on Instagram at actionfilmmakingpodcast. Until next time. Thanks for listening.